Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. Hello, listener. You're listening to episode 26 of the podcast. Adrian from Sofeast here. I'm going to be joined by our CEO, Renaud. And today we are taking a dive into the basics of quality management. So this process will help you to improve your QC and your processes, getting you better products from your suppliers in China, Southeast Asia, and elsewhere. We'll be covering in detail quality planning, quality control, and quality improvement. And hopefully by the end of this episode, you're going to have the tools that you need to at least implement a lot of these useful activities in order to improve the output that you're getting from your suppliers or your factory.
Hi, Renaud. Glad to have you with me. How are you going?
Hey, great. How are you?
Yes, not too bad. Thank you. I was reading an article the other day, and it mentioned that October is Global Quality Month. And this got me thinking about quality. And one of the things that we've discussed in the past and you've written so much about is quality management. So in this episode, I want to get into the basics of quality management for buyers with you. And I want to talk about what quality management as a process is and what it includes. So I know this is quite broad, but can you summarize it to begin with?
Yeah, well, there's something that a lot of quality professionals know is the Juran trilogy, and basically what is quality management. And I tugged it a little bit so that it speaks to importers in general, right? Mm-hmm. And there's three columns, let's say, or three groups of activities. One is really the planning to know what needs to be done, what do the users and the customers or consumers want, and translate that into something that's clear for purchasing and manufacturing. It is, working with the right people, with the right supplier, and so on. It is keeping an eye on risks and thinking of what we need to do to mitigate or address or live with the risk, whatever, but at least sort of manage the risks. That category is planning, let's say. Obviously, there's doing, but in quality, we there's manufacturing people do, and quality people are just, try to plan in advance, and they try to control what happens, and they try to push so that things improve. But typically, quality is a support activity, let's say this way, and doesn't really do things. So if you think of plan, do, study, adjust, or plan, do, check, act, let's say there's no really a do for quality. So let's keep do, but then it goes directly from plan to check and act or adjust. So check is the checking, the quality control. So that's the second big area here, the second big category. You call it whatever you want, testing, appraisal, inspections, basically checking the, it's mostly on the outcomes, let's say, of the operations, but it's also good if there's some of it on the processes, just to make sure that processes are under control, we know what's going on, and we're not going to have big surprises at the end. And then the last one is act or adjust, basically driving improvement, let's say, based on what we learned. It's fitting back to the planning, right? Here's where there's some issues. Here's where they're struggling. Here's what we found. Okay, back to planning. We have better data and so on. So improvement, it's, selecting the problems that really need to be fixed at the root, fixing on what's important. Focusing on what's important, preventing things the bad things to recur, at least the big problems, right? So there's this idea of improvement by problem solving. And typically you go one problem at a time, you know, and it's always problems that come up, but it's really a matter of picking the right problems to work on, the ones that can really have the biggest impact and might come back the most often, basically. Setting controls in place, updating the standards, the risk analysis, and things like that. So it really feeds back to planning. When you see some issues, then you do something about it, but then you take it into account again in your risk analysis, in your plan about, you know, who the good suppliers are, who the not so good suppliers are, and what we should do about that, and so on. Because there's new data every day, every hour. And from time to time, we need to step back and reflect and drive some decisions based on that. So that's the big categories, right? Planning, checking, controlling, and adjusting things and driving improvement, right? That's the way I would categorize it.
Great. It's kind of hard to visualize that in an audio format like we're actually doing. Obviously, the images are not great for podcasts, but I will try and include the image in the show notes because this kind of shows the cycle that you're discussing with the three different columns. So moving on, we've got this quality management plan that you've discussed. What benefits does implementing this provide for buyers in comparison with perhaps not paying so much attention to this kind of thing?
Well, if you want to fly blind and just do and never step back and never think of how to reduce your sources of risk, how to improve your processes and so on, you know, go ahead and I visited a lot of factories doing just that in China. And usually the result is not great, and there's customers complaining about poor quality, you know, inconsistent quality, very frequent delays, you know, cycle times that are way too long, and on and on and on. And really, if you don't go at your problems, you know, in a more or less systematic manner to make sure the big problems don't come back, then they will always come back. And then your people will always be super busy because they're just fighting fire, right? They're just running after the problems, and new problems happen every day. And there's some factories where the managers actually really enjoy that because they never need to step back and work on anything important. You know, it's always, is the problem is the supplier? Is this equipment is really bad? It's always about something else. It's not their fault. And then, you know, you can be production manager or director of operations or whatever, and you're the hero because you always jump on the problems and fix them. Well, not really. It's not really fixing them. It's sort of handling them so that they don't ruin your day, but in the end, you don't really improve, and it always keeps coming back, and the company never has stability, you know. So when you operate in an environment that's constantly unstable, it's just really, really hard to do any kind of improvement, really. I mean, it's always going to go by the wayside, and it's always going to be something more urgent, you know. So whatever you implement, it's going to be hard to keep it in place, which is really painful, right? I've seen that a number of times. They do something nice, and then the key person or the consultant driving the app goes away, and the other people didn't really understand it, there was no real buy-in or whatever. And then there's always urgencies, and the management is very focused on just pushing production out the door today. So it's all about urgent stuff, and never working on the important stuff. And then the resources don't keep the new systems or processes up, and they just go back to whatever is convenient. They don't maintain things, let's say this way, and that's just terrible. And working on data, I mean, working on data is a big topic. If you work with such and such component supplier, for example, just because you have a good feeling with them, that's kind of dangerous. I mean, if you don't try to see what their performance is and benchmark them against other suppliers, that's not good. This is impacting your performance in a direct manner, and in the end, your customers are going to judge that your performance is not great. So these are just a few examples here, a few key ideas. But if you want to drive any kind of improvement, you need to be a little bit systematic on it, or at least have some continuity of thought, continuity of purpose at the management level. And if you don't even have that, then how long is your organization going to keep up, to be alive? I don't know. It's scary.
Sure. But this is a good milestone for people who are interested in this kind of improvement, because it may be that somebody that's newer to manufacturing in China, they're not 100% aware of all of this. And so by uncovering it now, it helps them to go down the right path.
Well, if you start from nothing, okay, if you talk about someone who's coming for the first time to globalsources.com or alibaba.com and find some products and say, okay, I can sell that with my logo on my market, and they have no experience really managing overseas suppliers and managing quality and so on, they got to start somewhere, in a simple way. At least please document your requirements, because Chinese suppliers will not do it for you. And there's many reasons for that, but basically, if something is not documented, you cannot say that they did it wrong. But also, China is a high context culture, so if their natural tendency is to assume that the other party sort of understands, has a tacit understanding about what is required. And if you start to document everything and ask them to sign on it, it's like, I don't trust you. I'm gonna have you write all this, and then I'm gonna nail you if you don't do it. That's the thinking. That's the thinking. People are afraid of, documenting things for lack of trust and so on. So Chinese suppliers typically don't do that, and it's really the buyers. The buyer's job, right? And I'm saying that about China, but it's the same in Vietnam. It's not that different in other Southeast Asian countries. So it is the buyer's job, and you need to say, okay, this is what my customers can accept, what they cannot accept. This is sort of the proportion of bad stuff that I can accept. These are examples of problems and so on. And as you do the development or the sampling of your new products, you're going to have some issues. You're going to find some problems. Take them in photos. Start to compile a document about them, about things that you don't want. And then you to define clearly, okay, what is this product? What is it supposed to be made of? How are people going to use it and so on? And if you're developing a relatively complex new product, well, I think we touched on that in a previous podcast episode, but there's a lot more than that needs to be done. I will leave it at that. There's a lot of design reviews, a lot of risk analysis, a lot of steps to make things more tangible and test them and use that feedback to make the next iteration better and so on and so forth, right? So the very, very basic thing you have to do is understand what you and your customers will tolerate, will not tolerate, and document it, and make sure your suppliers see that, they understand it, they say okay. If possible, they help you refine it by asking some questions, by pointing to potential issues, things that they cannot comply with, and so on and so forth. Right, that would be the number one for sure. And then, based on that, do some quality control. Do some inspections. I mean, it's again, it's very, very basic. Say what you expect and then have it inspected. Right? And if your product, if you set maybe a warranty period on your product or something like this, then have at least some basic reliability testing done. If there are safety issues, you know, have some related testing done, right? If you intend to sell it on some market where there's some regulations, typically to protect consumers, well, you know, have the products tested, or from the very beginning, make sure that the materials, the components that are used are maybe already certified, you know, for example, for food contact and things like that. You can get away with a lot of with not doing a lot of testing if the right materials are selected from the start. So yeah, again, all of this is based on controlling that what you are buying is really suitable and acceptable and, you know, and safe, right? These are the very first things you need to look at. And then over time, well, when you see a big issue, you know, you need to pick your battles, especially if you're not a big customer. But if there's a big issue that impacts your productions and you're afraid that it comes back, you know, work with your supplier to do a root cause analysis and test some countermeasures and see where it goes and follow up over time and so on. And this might lead to, I don't know, it could be so many things. The change in the process, a change in the product design, and so on and so on. But, you know, don't be satisfied if the manufacturer says, oh, well, yeah, this lady, she made it the wrong way. Yeah, sorry about that. We'll just, we fired her, you know, we're retraining her or something. This is not acceptable. I'm sorry, it's not acceptable. You need to say, no. If it happened once, you know, it's going to happen again. If that's all you do, you're not fixing it at the root. You know, how come they were there and with the training that they supposedly already had, the problem still, you know, appeared and then nobody caught it and you shipped it to me? And I mean, so many other questions here that are not answered, right? So again, pick your battles wisely. If you're really a small buyer, you probably cannot drive any of that, right? If what you buy is, I don't know, 0.1% of what a factory makes in a year, they're not even going to listen to you. Now, if you are 10%, 30%, 50%, yeah, they should listen to you. Now, do they have the understanding of and the experience of how to do that? Maybe yes, maybe no. That's another challenge in China. Very often they have some good intentions, but they just can't do what you need. That's the reality.
Well, I suppose that would put somebody like, let's say, an FBA seller in potentially a difficult situation if they're not buying a huge amount from their supplier. Right. Because if, as we know, you know, the if quality issues are found in your Amazon products, that could be an end to your business, you know, if you can't overcome them and Amazon pull your store or your products. So in this case, I suppose you'd be talking about finding a different supplier.
Well, I mean, at least on your side, with the information you have, you might be able to draw some conclusions. Maybe the product design is not just, it's just, you know, comes with serious deficiencies. Maybe one of the materials need to be changed, you know, and it would solve the problem. Or maybe it's really just because the factory is just so bad. And in that case, yeah, either you really dump down your design, make it super simple, or you find another supplier. But that's quite difficult, actually. A lot of FBA sellers have to live with really bad suppliers for years and years, because quite often, they don't develop their own products. They don't design their own products. They just go, on Alibaba, or they used to come to Canton Fair and these kinds of trade shows, and they would say, "Oh yeah, I can sell that on Amazon. Can you make it in whatever gold blue and with this logo and in this kind of packaging?" And yes, okay. And they start to sell it, and maybe the market responds nicely to it. However, on the production side, they keep running into issues. I mean, that happens quite often, actually. And then, can you just go to another supplier and have them make the same product? Well, it's not really your product, right? It's the manufacturer's product. You went to see the manufacturer. You said, "I like your product. Please put my logo on it." So if it's a relatively simple product, quite often they will not have any qualms. They will just take some samples to some other suppliers and maybe pay them to make the mold or something like that. There might be some non-recurring engineering fees for that, but then they can work with a better supplier, you know, if the volumes justify it, right? Where it's really hard is not when the volumes are low and the supplier is bad. I mean, you can just discontinue that, replace it with an adjacent product from another supplier. The problem is when the volumes are good, you know, you're making money, or you would make money if that same manufacturer were not that bad. So yes, Amazon suppliers are the relatively small ones are often in relatively difficult situation on that side. Yeah.
Okay. So to go back to the quality management process as a whole, if we consider it as a system, and you've already mentioned the three columns and that the actions kind of form a loop. So you've got quality planning, quality control, quality improvement. And then when all is said and done with the improvement, we're going back to planning where we are auditing the systems and processes, you know, performing an FMEA, and then continuing back on again to quality control. This is a kind of process. And so are you able to summarize the sort of steps in that briefly as a final summary for this topic?
Yeah, the big, you know, the most common steps, let's say. Under quality planning, I would put four steps. Number one is to know your customers or consumers or users' expectations, right? So you were asking about Amazon customers, and in some product categories, they find out that certain types of defects are really, really bad, cannot be tolerated by a lot of customers. And then in another kind of product category, you know, customers are much, much more tolerant, much more easygoing, right? So you need to understand that. You need to see what they would accept, not accept. You know, it might be different in different countries, for example, or different kinds of applications of your products. So really you need to understand that. Then set some objectives and set a standard and, you know, approve samples, approve a checklist. So you sort of translate that knowledge about your customer expectations into something that's a bit more tangible and that can be used for the purposes of developing your new product, maybe, or manufacturing it and inspecting quality and all this. All of these people will need something a bit more tangible than, you know, they want it to look nice or something like that, right? It needs to be more tangible. So you translate it, really. A good specification sheet is definitely helpful. Maybe drawings, you know, with some measurements, spelling out these three are the critical to quality measurements. The other ones are, you know, important but less, you know, not critical to quality. These are the kinds of potential defects that we are a bit frightened about. We really don't want to see them. And these ones, maybe it's okay if it's a low proportion. You set your AQL limits to so that you know what to talk about when you talk to the potential suppliers, and you're going to say, well, you know, we're going to do whatever, you know, 1 or 1.5% for major and so on, and you will see if they run away or not. Approving some samples, definitely always an important step to confirm the touch and feel. And if that's not sufficient, you might need to also set some boundary samples. For example, if the packaging has to be in a certain color, but you can accept a little bit darker, a little bit lighter, well, why not just also ask the printer to make you know, a few pieces just slightly darker and a few more pieces slightly lighter. And then if you're happy with that, with anything that's in between these extremes, then you approve it. This is the boundary samples. Anything darker than the darker one is not acceptable. Anything lighter than the lighter one is not acceptable. Mm. And this approach can be used for so many things. Whenever there's a little bit of ambiguity, you know, it's not very easy to quantify, you want to do something like this. And obviously you need the supplier to be aware of that, to pay attention to it, to understand it. And if possible, as I said before, to give you some feedback on it, to maybe help you make a few things a bit clearer, right? So that's really, again, translating what you learn from your customers into something that can be used by manufacturers and maybe the inspectors that you're going to send, right? Under planning, number three would be paying a lot of attention to who you're working with, you know, in your suppliers. So if you're an importer, maybe just one supplier, right? Working with the right kind of supplier. And there's a previous podcast episode where we explain what is an ODM, an OEM, a contract manufacturer, and so on. You need to think of that. You need to think of the right size, maybe not too small, not too large, some experience, maybe the same kind of product, maybe with the certifications for selling into your country, and so on and so forth. If you want to go deeper into that, if it's really your product, you want to know what's going on, you might also want to know some of the suppliers of the critical components of your product, right? And same thing here again. Same things, more or less, right?
Mm.
Yeah, that's really quite important. That's really putting things in place before you start ordering, manufacturing, right? And then really number four is keeping an eye on the risk all along. So when you do, for example, some due diligence and some factory audits on some potential suppliers, well, you are basically evaluating the risks of working with them, right? Not just the, you know, how good of a fit are they? What kind of processes do they have in-house? Do they know what they're doing? You know, it goes very fast into, is it safe to work with these guys? Or you know, is there a chance I'm gonna have a lot of problems? And there's a lot of things around risk analysis, you know, it can be an FMEA, maybe when you, when you're developing new product design or when you review some processes. I mean, there's a lot of things. So basically keeping an eye on the risks. Then based on the risks, you're gonna think of, hey, what kind of quality control should I do? Right. And if I'm gonna keep it simple, there's basically two approaches to quality control. Inspecting materials and products. So it can be before assembly, it can be during assembly, it could be at the end of assembly. And it could also involve some monitoring of processes. Anyway, that is, you know, basically if you wait until everything is finished out of the lines, the risk is that it's not good. And then what do you do, right?
Right.
So especially with a new supplier or a relatively large order, it's much better to go during production. Try to see if there are issues at that point. If there are issues, you should try to detect them. And then you can have a good conversation with the manufacturer about what happened and why and what can they do right now to limit the problem. And and to fix the problem, right?
Mm.
And then second one under quality control is basically sending some samples to labs for compliance testing, safety testing, reliability testing. There's some overlap between these three concepts here, but really it's doing certain things on the product samples that cannot be done during an inspection, that often cannot be checked in the facilities of the manufacturer. I mean, that's what we discussed in the previous podcast. And yeah, it's important to keep monitoring what you're putting on your market, right? Because depending on the market, obviously, and depending on the kind of product, well, that can really kill your company, actually. If you make some really big mistakes there, maybe you have to pay for a recall. I mean, it's going to be extremely damaging to your reputation, to your finances, and so on. And then finally, the last category, as I say, would be quality improvement. And really, one, as I said, would be to see what kind of problems are found, typically during quality control or earlier during the factory audit and so on, and say, well, this is really concerning. We need to do something about that because we cannot live with that risk. So, for example, I don't know, you buy some coffee machines and then the filtering mechanism has a problem on 20% of the pieces on a batch. And then they rework it and then they say, okay, it's fine, it's okay, we can ship out. And you say, oh, okay, it's not going to come back, right? Oh, no, now we know it's because, you know, that guy made a mistake, he didn't pay attention, blah, blah, blah. It's because of the supplier, you know. It's not our fault, just our supplier, they did that. And yeah, sorry about that, now we cut it and we made it very clear to them, you know, we don't want that next time. Do you feel safe? I mean, of course not. This kind of stuff, you know, might come back to bite you. So you need to drive some corrective actions, as I explained before. And you might find some issues, maybe in a factory audit, that really scare you. Then it's more of a preventive issue. For example, you see that when they have some non-conforming materials, they don't really put it aside. And then you're afraid that they might just by mistake take it and still process it, you know, with a misunderstanding or something. Well, then you say, hey, no, your labeling really, really sucks. I mean, you have to do something here. That's a preventive action. And it's not that complicated to put in place. So that's another example. Under quality improvement, yeah, setting some controls on identified risks. For example, it's a very process-based kind of manufacturing. And you look at their equipment and you say, okay, so what do you do to keep it up in, you know, making production as expected? And they're like, well, you know, yeah, we kind of know from experience and blah, blah, blah. You know, this kind of reasoning that should scare you is really not reassuring. Then you say, well, you guys need to put in place a preventive maintenance plan, right? And you need to have some process controls here and here and here. So again, it's more preventive here. You know, it's preventive actions here that I'm talking about. I don't know, they're doing some plastic injection molding and you look at their gauges to check the temperature and, you know, it's not calibrated and they only have one gauge that just checks the temperature on the side of the mold, but they don't really know the temperature in the middle of the mold. I mean, these kind of things are scary. So you're going to tell them, hey, based on best practices or, you know, I should say minimum good practices, good manufacturing practices, some people call it, you know, well, you should do that, you know. And again, if you're a tiny, tiny customer, they might say, sure. Okay, go. If you're a bit bigger, they might pay attention and then they might get back to you with some good news later on, right? And then, you know, the last one under quality improvement is really just to keep updating things. You know, your quality standard, you see some new problems coming up, document them, you know, make it very clear you don't want that. You identify new risks, well, update your risk analysis. and update the maybe the risk level and so on and so forth. Really, it has to have some feedback. You have some problems with some component suppliers, make sure they know about it and ask them to explain it, you know. Make sure there's feedback. Very often we see some situations where, for example, there's people doing assembly and then they create, you know, there's some issues, there's some defects on the product. And then you have like three inspectors at the end of the line, checking everything and fixing stuff and not giving any feedback. And we're like, but don't you tell them so they do it differently? And no, you know, this is production over there. You know, can't really talk to these guys or whatever. You know, they don't listen. Mm. These people are paid by the piece anyway. Anything that slows them down, they will hit us from the from behind or something. I mean, it's not going to happen. Okay, well, that's really a lost opportunity. That's really detrimental to performance. So update all this and give feedback, you know, make it a lively system, not just something that that you do, but doesn't self, you know, doesn't drive improvement on its own. There's no feedback. It's not a system that keeps sort of rotating and pushing for better and better iterations. You're in trouble. That's not good. So yeah, that's let it loop on itself basically. I hope I gave a good summary.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. That's a brilliant summary of quality management. So anyone listening, if you weren't sure of what the best practices are when implementing this, that really goes through it. So yeah, great. Thank you.
Hey, great. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.